Early in the arena, it would be worth risking some gold on the long chance. They offered him a proposition. Confess his crime and be chosen for the test. An easy thing to arrange, as your masters would be quick to spot his skill. Once he had killed you, he and his wife would be free. Velin realized he had sobered completely. The nausea fled in the face of the cold, implacable compulsion. His wife is still in the Blackhold?
She is.
By now she will have heard of her husband's fate. I fear what her grief will make her do. This magistrate and his wealthy friends, you have their names? What would you do if I gave them to you? Velin fixed him with a cold stare. Kill them all. That is your intention, isn't it? To set me on this course for vengeance. Well, you'll get it. Just give me the names. You misunderstand me, Velin. I have no wish for vengeance. In any case, you couldn't kill them all. Wealthy men from noble families have many protectors, many guards. You might kill one, but not all. And Alir would still be waiting a fate in the Blackhold once you have been cut down. Then why tell me this when I can do nothing to set it right? You can speak for her. Your word will carry much weight. If you went to your aspect and explained... She's a denier. They won't help her unless she renounces her heresy. She won't do that. Her soul is bound to her beliefs more closely than you could imagine. I doubt she could renounce them even if she wished to. I know your aspect to be a compassionate man, Velin. He will speak for her. Even if he does, the Blackhold is no longer guarded by the Sixth Order, since the last conclave. It falls under the control of the Fourth. I have met Aspect Tendris, and he will not help an unrepentant denier. Velin turned back to the river, frustration raging in his chest. Erlian's pale face asking for his wife over and over again in his head. So there's nothing you can do? Erlin asked. He sounded resigned, and Velin knew his visit had been a desperate act, undertaken at considerable risk. You put great trust in me, coming here, Velin said. Thank you. I've lived long enough to judge a man's heart. He stepped back from the river, offering Velin his hand. I'm sorry to have burdened you with this. I'll leave you in peace now. As I grow older, I'm learning that the truth is never a burden. It's a gift. Velin shook his hand. Tell me the names. I won't set you on a path to your own death. You won't, trust me. I thought of something I can do. Chapter 10. He chose the gate on the eastern wall, assuming it would be the least busy. Even given the lateness of the hour, the main palace gate would be too well guarded. Too many mouths to speak of how Velin Alsorna had appeared demanding an audience with the king. Piss off, boy, the sergeant at the gate told him, not bothering to emerge from the shelter of the guardhouse. Go sleep it off. Velin realized he must smell like an alehouse. My name is Brother Velin Alsorna of the Sixth Order, he said, forcing authority into his voice, as if he had every right to be here. I request an audience with King Janus. Faith! The sergeant sighed in exasperation. He came out to fix Velin with a fierce glare. You know a man could find himself flogged for giving a false name to an officer of the Royal Guard. A younger guardsman appeared behind the sergeant, staring at Velin with a disconcertingly awed expression.
Sarge?
But it's late and I'm in a good mood. The sergeant was advancing on Velin with balled fists, his grizzled face tensed with impending violence.
So it'll just be a beating before I send you on your way.
Sarge, the younger man said urgently, catching hold of his arm.
It's him.
The sergeant's gaze swung to the younger man, then back to Velin, looking him up and down.
You sure? Was on duty at the circle this morning, wasn't I? It's really him.
The sergeant's fists uncurled, but he didn't appear any happier.
What's your business with the king?
For him alone. He'll see me if he's told I'm here. And I'm sure he'll be displeased if he hears I've been turned away. An accomplished lie, he congratulated himself. In truth, he had no certainty the king would see him at all. The sergeant thought it over. His scars told of a lifetime of hard service, and Velin realized he must resent any intrusion into what was no doubt a comfortable billet in which to await his pension.
My compliments and apologies to the captain. the sergeant told the younger guardsman. Wake him, and tell him about our visitor. They stood regarding each other in wary silence after the guardsman had scampered off, hastily unlocking a small door set in the huge oakwood gate and disappearing inside.
Heard you killed 5 Denier assassins the night of the Aspec massacre, the sergeant grunted eventually.
It was 50. It seemed an age before the door reopened, and the young guardsman emerged followed by a trim young man, impeccably dressed in the uniform of a captain in the King's Horse Guard. He gave Valin a brief look of appraisal before offering his hand.
Brother Valin, he said in a slight Renfalian accent.
Captain Nirka Smolin, at your service.
Apologies for waking you, Captain,
Valin said, slightly distracted by the neatness of the young man's attire.
Everything from the shine of his boots to the precise trim of his moustache spoke of a remarkable attention to detail. He certainly didn't appear to be a man just woken from his bed.
Not at all.
Captain Smolin gestured at the open door.
Shall we?
Valin's boyhood memories of gleaming opulence were not matched by the interior of the eastern wing of the palace. After crossing a small courtyard, he was led into a warren of corridors crammed with a variety of dust-covered chests and cloth-wrapped paintings.
This wing is used mostly for storage, Captain Smolin explained, seeing his bemused expression. The king receives many gifts.
He followed the captain through a series of corridors and chambers until they came to a large room with a checkered floor and several grand paintings on the wall. He found his attention immediately drawn to the paintings. Each was at least 7 feet across and depicted a battle. The setting changed with each painting, but the same figure was at the center of every one, a handsome, flame-haired man astride a white charger, sword held high above his head. King Janus. Though Valin's memory of the king was dim, he didn't remember his jaw being quite so square or his shoulders quite so broad.
The 6 battles that united the realm, Captain Smolin said, painted by Master Benrel Leniel. It took him over 3 years.
Valin remembered Master Benrel's drawings in Aspect Alera's rooms, the fine detail with which each was rendered, and the way the exposed viscera seemed to come out of the parchment. He saw none of the same clarity now. The colors were bright but not vibrant, the battling warriors clearly depicted but stilted somehow. Not as if they were fighting at all, simply standing in a pose.
Not his best, is it? Captain Smolin commented. He was commanded to it, you see. I suspect he had little love for his subject. Have you ever seen his fresco in the Great Library commemorating the victims of the Red Hand? It's quite breathtaking.
I've never seen the Great Library, Valin replied, thinking Captain Smolin would probably find much in common with Canis.
You should. It's a credit to the realm.
I'll need your weapons.
Valin unclipped his cloak, with the 4 throwing knives secured within its folds, unbuckled his sword, unhooked his hunting knife from his belt, and removed the narrow-bladed dagger from his left boot.
Nice, Captain Smolin admired the dagger.
Alpiran?
I don't know. I took it from a dead man.
These will be waiting for you here.
Smolin laid his weapons out on a nearby table. No one will touch them. With that, he moved to a bare patch of wall and pushed, a section of the wall swinging inwards, revealing a dark stairwell. Follow the stairs to the top.
He's in there? Valin asked.
He had expected to be led to a throne room or audience chamber.
He is indeed. Best not keep him waiting.
Valin nodded his thanks and entered the stairwell. Oil lamps set into the wall cast a dim light on the steps, the gloom deepening when Smolin closed the door behind him. As instructed, he climbed the stairs, the fall of his boots on the stone steps loud in the confined space. The door at the top was slightly ajar, outlined in bright lamplight from the room beyond. It creaked loudly when Valin pushed it open, but the man seated at the desk before him didn't look up. He sat crouched over a roll of parchment, his quills scratching over it, leaving a spidery script in its wake. The man was old, in his 60s, but still broad in the shoulder. His long hair hung over his face. Once red, it was now grey but still had a faint tinge of copper. He wore a plain shirt of white linen, the sleeves stained with ink, his only adornment a gold signet ring on the 3rd finger of his right hand, a signet ring bearing the symbol of a rearing horse.
Highness,
Valin began, sinking to one knee.
The king raised his left hand, motioning for him to rise, then pointing at a nearby chair. His quill didn't stop on the parchment. Valin moved to the chair, finding it piled high with books and scrolls. He hesitated, then carefully gathered them together and placed them on the floor before sitting down. He waited. The only sound in the room came from the scratch of the king's quill. Valin wondered if he should speak again, but something told him it was best to keep silent. Instead, he surveyed the room. He had thought Aspect Alera's room to have been the most book-filled space he'd ever seen, but the king's room put it to shame. They lined the walls in great stacks, rising nearly to the ceiling. In between the stacks were boxes of scrolls, some flaked and withered with age. The only decoration in the room was a large map of the realm above the fireplace, its surface partly covered with short notations in a spidery script. Oddly, some of the notations were written in red ink, and others black. Down one edge of the map was a list of some kind. Each item had been written in black, but crossed through in red. It was a long list. "You have your father's face, but your mother's way of looking at things." Valin's gaze snapped back to the king. He had laid his quill aside and reclined in his chair. His green eyes were bright and shrewd in his craggy, weathered face. Valin found he couldn't stop his eyes straying to the livid red scars on the king's neck, the legacy of his childhood brush with the red hand. "Highness?" he stammered. "Your father was clever in the ways of war, but in most other things I have to say he was as dumb as a rock. Your mother, on the other hand, was clever in almost everything. You had her look just now when you were looking at my map. I'm sure she would have been gratified to know you held such a high opinion of her, Highness." The king raised an eyebrow. "Don't flatter me, boy. I have servants aplenty for that. Besides, you're no good at it. In that, at least, you're like your father." Valin felt himself flush and bit back an apology. "He's right. I'm no courtier. Forgive my intrusion, Highness. I've come to ask for your help. Most people who come before me do, although usually with obscenely expensive gifts and several hours' worth of groveling. Will you grovel for me, young brother?" The king's mouth had curved in a small, humorless smile. "No," Valin found his trepidation was quickly disappearing in the face of a cold anger. "No, Highness, I will not. And yet you come here at this forsaken hour and demand favors." "I demand nothing." "But you do want something." "What is it, I wonder? Money?" "I doubt it." "It meant little to your parents. I dare say it means little to you. Help with a marriage proposal, perhaps? Got your eye on some wench, but her father doesn't want a penniless order boy for a son-in-law?" The king angled his head, studying Valin closely. "Oh no, hardly that." "So what can it be?" "Justice," Valin said. "Justice for a murdered man. Justice for his family." "Murdered, eh? By whom?" "By me, Highness. Today I killed a man in the test of the sword. He was innocent, a victim of a false conviction brought simply to make him face me in the test." The humor faded from the king's face, replaced with something much more serious, but otherwise unreadable. "Tell me." Valin told him all of it. Erlin's arrest, his wife's imprisonment in the Black Hold, the names of those responsible. Gentle Al-Hilsa, the magistrate who had condemned Erlin, and Mandril Al-Unsa, and Harris Estian, the two wealthy men who had sought to profit from his death. "And how do you come by this intelligence?" the king asked when he had finished. "A man came to me tonight, a man I trust." Valin paused, gathering his will for the risk he knew he had to take. "A man who knows much of the troubles besetting deniers in the realm." "Ah! For a member of the Order, you choose unusual friends." "The faith teaches us that a man's mind should be open to truth, wherever he finds it." "It seems you have your mother's way with words as well." The king pulled a fresh piece of parchment from a stack on his desk, dipped his quill in a bottle of black ink, and wrote a short passage. He then wiped the quill on his shirt sleeve, dipped it in a pot of red ink, and wrote a list below the black text. He completed the document with an elaborate signature, then took a candle and a block of sealing wax, touching the flame to the wax to melt a droplet onto the bottom of the parchment. He blew softly on the wax for a moment, then pressed his signet ring into it. "Every time I sign my name to one of these," he said, putting his quill aside, "I have to amend my map." Balin turned back to the chart on the wall, looking again at the list. Black words crossed through with red. Names, he realized. Names of men he's killed. Norta's father must be there somewhere. "I'll execute these men," the king said. "On the strength of what you've told me. There will be no trial. The king's word is above all law. Their families will hate me for what I've done, but since I intend to confiscate their property and render them penniless, it matters not." Balin met the king's gaze, trying to decide if this was some kind of bluff, but saw no deception. "A family should not be punished for the crimes of but one of its members. It is how it must be with nobles. Leave the family its wealth, and they'll use it against me sooner or later. Besides, I know these men, and their families. They are a vile, greedy lot, by and large. Life in the gutter will suit them well. You put much stock in my word, Highness. I could be lying." "You're not. 30 years a king teaches a man how to hear lies." "A king's justice is hard indeed," Balin decided. Could he stomach it? Seeing the certainty in the king's expression, he realized he had no choice. The course had already been set as soon as he opened his mouth. "And the man's wife?" "Well, there we have a problem. She's an unrepentant denier. Aspect Tendris will no doubt seek to hang her from the walls in a cage. If she doesn't die under questioning first, of course." "Highness, you are the king of this realm, and the champion of the faith. There must be some influence."
"Must there?"
The king's expression was a mix of anger and amusement. "I have done what I must this night." He gestured to the death warrant he had written. "It is a king's duty to dispense justice where he can. I will kill these men because they have broken the laws of this realm and deserve their end. As for the victim's wife, her crimes fall outside my jurisdiction. Therefore, it is not a question of what I must do, but what I may do, if it serves my purpose. So, Valin Alsorna, tell me how saving this woman's life will serve my purpose. You used your name to get in here. Do you have nothing else to say? Mother, forgive me. I know that your highness had plans for me, before my father sent me to the order. If it pleases you, I will submit to your plans if you will secure the release of Erlian's wife." The king reached for a crystal decanter on his desk and poured a measure of red wine into a glass. "Cumbrilin, 10 years old. One of the benefits of kingship is a well-stocked cellar." He offered the decanter to Valin. "Would you care for some?" Valin's head still ached from his binge in the alehouse. "No, thank you, Highness. Your father wouldn't drink with me either." The king sipped his wine slowly. "But then he never sought to bargain with me. I commanded and he followed. Loyalty is our strength." "Yes, a fine motto, one of my best. I chose it for him, even chose the hawk as your family crest. It was something of a joke, actually. Your father hated hawking. It's a sport for nobles, after all." He took another sip from his wine, wiping the red stain from his lips with an ink-spattered sleeve. "Do you know why he left my service? I had heard there was discord between you over his wish to marry and legitimize my sister. Know about her, eh? That must have been a shock. It's true enough that I refused your father's request to marry, and he was angry over it. But in truth, I believe he had resolved to leave my side when I had to kill my first minister. They were at each other's throats for years, but when Alcendar's thievery came to light, it was your father who spoke for him when no other would. He had to die, of course, although it was a grievous loss. Few other men knew finance so well as Artis Alcendar. I have served with his son since we were boys, Highness. He could never accept that his father stole from your purse." "Oh, he wasn't a thief of coin. He was a thief of power. It's a terribly seductive thing, Valin. But to wield it well, You have to hate it as much as you love it. Lord Artis never understood that. His actions became driven wholly by ambition, endangering the peace of the realm, and so I killed him.
And took his family's wealth?
Of course. Made sure the wife and daughters were taken care of, though. Felt I owed him that much. Tau Lord Almirna was kind enough to take them in. Gave the woman some land in the northern reaches, under a false name, of course. Can't have my nobles thinking I'm soft-hearted. It would ease my brother's mind greatly if I could tell him this.
I'm sure. But you won't.
The king put down his wine glass and rose, rubbing and groaning at the stiffness of his legs, going to the map above the fireplace. The unified realm, he said. Four fiefs once divided by war and hatred, now united in loyalty to me. Except, of course, they aren't. Nilsel sold itself to me because it was tired of armies raping its land for fodder every few years.
Renfell lost half her knights in battle,
and Lord Theros saw that if he fought me any longer, he would soon lose the other half. Cumbriel hates and fears me in equal measure, but they fear the faith more and will stay loyal as long as I keep it from their door. This is the realm I spilled a sea of blood to build, and through you, I would have stopped it tearing itself apart when I die. You are right. I had many plans for you. The son of a battle lord and a former mistress in the Fifth Order, both commoners at that. You would be the means by which I would bind the common folk to my line, not just in Azrael, but in all the fiefs. And when I had the hearts of the commons, their nobles could call for war, but none would answer. I had plans for you indeed, young hawk. He scanned the map, his sigh heavy with regret. But your mother had plans of her own. When she persuaded Aspect Arlin to take you into the Sixth Order, she made you a brother, bound to the faith, not to me. Highness, if it is your wish that I leave the Order, it's too late for that. It would be clear to all that you had left the faith at my command. Robbing the Order of its most famous son would do little to make the people love me. No, the plans I had for you are long dead. Velin fumbled for something to say, some argument to secure the king's assistance. The prospect of leaving Erlian's wife to torture and slow execution was unbearable. Wild schemes flickered through his mind as panic gripped him. He would sneak into the black hole and rescue her. His brothers would help him. He was sure of it, although it probably meant death for all of them. I was not the first, you know, the king said softly. Velin saw he was looking at a short list scribbled at the top of the map. There have been five before me. The king tapped a finger to the five names on the list. Five kings since Varin led our people to this land, and drove the Siorda into the forest and the Lonak into the mountains. And in 500 years, no ruling family has held the realm for more than a generation. Prince Melsius is a good man, Highness.
My butcher is a good man, boy!
The king snapped, suddenly angry.
So are my stable master, and the man who sweeps dung from my courtyard. My son is a good man, it is true, but it takes more than goodness to make a king. When he took the throne, you were to be at his side, to do what he could not. Now all I can do is make this realm so great that those who would tear it down will fear being crushed by its fall.
He returned to his chair, sitting down stiffly.
And so I will make a new plan. And you, Brother Velin Alsorna, will serve my purpose again.
He searched through a pile of papers on his desk, extracting a sheaf of documents sealed with black wax. Aspect Tendris keeps me busy with his loyal guidance, and humble requests for new measures to combat the scourge of the unfaithful.
Here.
The king selected the topmost document. He suggests the realm guard flog any subject who cannot recite the Catechism of Faith on command. Aspect Tendris is zealous in his beliefs, Highness.
Aspect Tendris is a deluded fanatic. But even a fanatic can be bargained with.
The king held up another document and began to read.
I would most humbly remind your Highness of the regular reports that the unfaithful are gathering in unprecedented numbers in the Martish Forest. I have heard from the most reliable sources that these are adherents of the Cumbrelian form of God-worship, and are most vehement in their heresy. They are well armed, and my sources assure me,
resolved to meet any attempt to dislodge them with the utmost violence. I implore your highness, with the greatest respect, to heed my calls to act decisively in this matter. The king tossed the parchment aside. What do you make of this? The Aspect wishes you to send the realm guard to the Martish to root out deniers.
Indeed! As if my soldiers have little better to do than run around the woods for months with Cumbrelin longbowmen waiting behind every tree.
Oh no, the realm guard will not go within 10 miles of the Martish, but you will.
Me, Highness?
Yes. I will prevail upon Aspect Arlin to send a small contingent of brothers to the Martish. You will be among them. As will a young man named Lyndon Alhestian. You know this name?
Alhestian.
Velin recalled the furious man lashing his way through the crowd at the Summertide Fair, where Norta's father had met his end. I once met a Lord Marshal of that name.
Larkil Alhestian, Lord Marshal of my 27th Regiment of Horse.
A capable officer and one of my wealthier nobles. Like my late First Minister, a man of great ambition, particularly where his son is concerned. His elder son, Lyndon. Velin felt a hard ball of dread form in the pit of his stomach.
His son, Highness.
A fine young man with many admirable qualities. Sadly, humility and intelligence are not among them. The fellow has a wide circle of friends, in truth a gang of admirers and sycophants. Nothing attracts friends like wealth and arrogance. He is currently the darling of my esteemed court, winning tournaments, betting ladies, fighting duels. It's a rather tediously familiar story, I'm afraid. A young man achieves great fame and success at an early age, and begins to believe his own legend, not helped by the indulgence of an ambitious father. He is by far the most popular young man in court, far more popular than my own son, who has never been gifted in the ways of artifice. Every day I'm beset with entreaties to give the younger Alhestian a commission, something to help improve his worth, set him on the path to glory. And so I will. He will be made a sword of the realm, and commanded to raise his own regiment, which he will take into the Martish to root out the deniers currently infesting it. Sadly, I predict this will be a long and arduous campaign, and after, the king paused to think, 6 months or so he will tragically meet his end in a denier ambush. Their eyes met, Velin's stomach churning with mingled anger and despair.
I am a fool, he decided, a mouse seeking bargains with an owl.
Erlian's wife, Highness? He grated.
Oh, I dare say Aspect Tendris will be in a more amenable frame of mind when I tell him of my plans for a crusade in the Martish, especially since you will be part of it. He is fond of you, you know. I'll vouch for the woman, tell him I'm convinced of her redemption, provided she says nothing to the contrary. She will be free by tomorrow evening. I need assurance that she and her son will be provided for. Then he forced himself to keep his eyes locked on the king's. If I'm to be part of your crusade. I'm sure Tower Lord Almirna can find room for another exile or two. The distinction between faithful and denier means little in the northern reaches.
The king turned back to his desk, lifting his quill and smoothing a blank parchment out before him.
You will receive your orders in the next few days. He began to write again, his quill scratching its path across the page.
It took a moment for Valen to realize he had been dismissed. He got to his feet, finding himself slightly dizzy, whether with anger or sorrow he couldn't tell.
My thanks for your time, Highness. He forced the words out and moved to the door.
Remember, young hawk, the king said, not looking up from his parchment, this is not the whole of my plan for you, merely the beginning. I command, you follow. That is the bargain you made this night. He glanced up, meeting Velen's eyes again. You understand?
I understand perfectly, Highness.
The king held his gaze for a moment longer, then returned to his writing, saying nothing as Valen left. Captain Smolin was waiting for him when he emerged from the wall.
Your visit is concluded, brother?
Valen nodded and collected his weapons from the table, re-equipping himself quickly, possessed by a strong desire to be away from this place. He needed time alone to think. The enormity of his bargain with the king had stirred his thoughts into a confused jumble. He followed Smolin back along the myriad corridors lined with forgotten gifts, his mind continually repeating the king's final words. "This is not the whole of my plan for you, merely the beginning. You'll forgive me if I leave you here," Smolin said at the corner to what Valen recognized as the corridor leading to the east gate. "I have pressing duties elsewhere." Valen peered at the shadowy end of the corridor, then turned back to Smolin, seeing a faint discomfort in the set of the man's face. "Pressing duties, Captain?" "Yes," Smolin coughed. "Very pressing." He took a step backwards, nodded formally, then turned and strode back the way they had come. Valen took another look at the corridor ahead of him, a faint sensation of wrongness making his heart beat faster. "Ambush," he decided. "The king has untrustworthy servants." He considered going after the captain and forcing him to walk ahead into whatever was waiting, but found he couldn't summon the will. It had been a very long night. Besides, he could always find him later. He palmed a throwing knife from the folds of his cloak and started along the corridor. He expected the attack to come at the darkest point, near the corridor's end, but nothing happened. No black-clad men with curved swords leaping out to challenge him. But there was a faint scent in the air, subtle, sweet, like flowers on a hot day. "I'd heard you were handsome." He pivoted towards the sound of the voice, the knife half out of his hand before he saw her. A girl, standing half in shadow. He managed to move his hand at the last instant, sending the throw wide, the knife thudding into the wall an inch from her head. She glanced at it briefly before stepping forward into the light. Valen had seen beautiful women before. He had always thought Aspect Alera the most beautiful woman he was likely to meet. But this girl was different. Everything about her, from the flawless porcelain of her skin to the soft curve of her face and the lustrous red gold of her hair, spoke of effortless perfection. "You're not," she said, coming closer, head angled as she studied him with bright green eyes. "But your face is interesting." She reached up, fingers extended into a caress. Valen took a step back before her hand could touch his face. He dropped to one knee and bowed low. "Highness, please get up," said Princess Lerna Alniran. "We can't talk properly if your face is constantly pointed at the floor." Valen rose, waiting and trying not to stare. "I'm sorry if I surprised you," the princess apologized. "Captain Smolin was kind enough to inform me of your visit. I thought we should talk." Valen said nothing. His sense of wrongness hadn't faded. Something about this encounter was dangerous. He knew he should make an excuse and leave, but found himself unable to find the words. He wanted her to talk to him. He wanted to be near her. It was a compulsion that provoked a sudden and deep resentment. "I had intended to watch you fight today," the princess went on. "My father wouldn't let me, of course. I was told it was a very stirring contest." Her smile was dazzling, performed with a precise affectation of sincerity that put Norta to shame. "She expects me to be flattered," he realized. "Is there something you wish of me, Highness? Like Captain Smolin, I have pressing business elsewhere." "Oh, don't be angry with the captain. He is normally so correct in his duties. I'm afraid I may be corrupting him terribly." She turned and went to the wall, where his throwing knife was embedded, and worked it loose with difficulty. "I like trinkets," she said, examining the blade, running her delicate fingers over the metal. "Young men give them to me all the time. None of them have yet given me a weapon, though." "Keep it," Valen told her. "If you'll excuse me, Highness." He bowed and turned to go. "I won't," she said flatly. "We haven't finished our talk. Come." She beckoned to him with the knife, moving away from the wall. "We will talk together beneath the stars, you and I. It will be as if we are in a song." "I could just leave," he realized. She couldn't stop me, could she? After briefly considering the prospect of fighting off hordes of guardsmen summoned to prevent his leaving, he followed her back along the corridor. She led him to a door in an unobtrusive alcove, pushing it open and gesturing for him to enter. The garden beyond was small, but even in moonlight the beauty on display in its flower beds was remarkable. There seemed to be an endless variety of blooms, far more than in Aspect Alera's garden. "It should really be seen in daylight," Princess Lyanna said, closing the door and stepping past him, pausing to examine a rosebush. "And it's a little late in the year. Many of my darlings are already shrinking in the cold." She walked to a low stone bench in the center of the garden, her gown swaying gracefully. Valen distracted himself by searching the flower beds for something vaguely familiar. To his surprise, he found it in the shape of yellow buds nestling beneath a small maple tree.
"Winter blooms. You know flowers?"
The princess sounded surprised. "I was told brothers of the Sixth Order knew nothing beyond the arts of war."
"We are taught many things."
She sat on the bench and raised her hands, gesturing at the flower beds.
"Well, do you like my garden?"
"It's very beautiful, Highness. When I was little, my father asked me what I wanted as a winterfall gift. Growing up in the palace meant I was never alone. There were always guards or maids or tutors, so I said I wanted somewhere to be alone. He brought me here. It was just an old, empty courtyard then. I made it a garden. No one else is allowed here, and I have never shown this place to anyone before now." She was studying him intently, gauging his reaction.
"I am honored, Highness."
"I'm glad.
So as I have honored you with a confidence, perhaps you will honor me with one in return. What business did you have with my father?"
He was tempted to say nothing, but knew he couldn't simply ignore her. Various lies flicked through his mind, but he had a sense that the princess had her father's ear for untruth.
"I don't think King Janus would wish me to discuss it," he said after a moment.
"Really?
Then I am forced to guess. Please tell me if I guess well.
You found out that one of the men you killed today had been forced into the fight. You came here asking my father for justice. Am I correct?"
"You know much, Highness."
"Yes. But sadly, I find that I never know enough. Did my father grant your request?"
"He was gracious enough to dispense justice."
"Oh." There was a faint note of pity in her voice. "Poor Lord Alonso. He always used to make me laugh at the Warding's night ball, the way he would stumble about the dance floor.
I'm sure your fond memories will be a great comfort to him on the gallows, Highness."
Her smile faded.
"You think me cold?
Perhaps I am. I have known many lords over the years. Smiling, friendly men who gave me sweets and presents and told me how pretty I am. All seeking to win my father's favor. Some he sent away, some he allowed to remain in his service, and some he killed. He realized his own father must have been among the many lords she had met, and wondered if she had aroused as much uncertainty in him. Did my father give you presents? All your father ever gave me was a hard stare, though not as hard as the stare your mother gave me. My father's plan for us made them wary of me, I suppose."
"Us, Highness?"
She raised an eyebrow. "We were to be married. Didn't you know?"
"Married? It was absurd. Ridiculous. Married to a princess? Married to her?"
He recalled the rude little girl from his boyhood visit to the palace.
"I'm not marrying you. You're dirty." Was this really how the king intended to bind him to his line?
"No, I never liked the idea much either," Princess Lyanna said, reading his face. "But now I can appreciate the elegance of it. My father's designs often take years before their intent is revealed. In this case, he intended to place you at my brother's side and enhance my standing. Together we would guide my brother in his rule. Perhaps your brother will need no guidance." She raised her perfect face to the sky, studying the spectacular array of stars. "Time will tell. I should come here at night more often. The view is really quite lovely." She turned to him, her face serious now. "What does it feel like when you take a life?" Her tone was one of simple curiosity. Either she didn't know her question might cause offense, or didn't care. Oddly, he found he wasn't offended. It was something no one had ever asked him, although he knew the answer all too well. "It feels like your soul has been soiled," he said. "And yet you continue to do it. Until today it has always been necessary. And so you come to my father seeking to assuage your guilt. What price did he extract, I wonder? I expect he took you into his service. A spy within the Sixth Order would be an asset indeed." "A spy? If only that were all. Did you lead me here simply to ask questions to which you already know the answer, Highness?" To his surprise, she laughed. It sounded rich, genuine. "How refreshing you are. You offer me no flattery, you sing me no songs, and quote me no sonnets. You are singularly without charm or calculation." She looked down at the throwing knife in her hand. "And you are the only man I've met that has succeeded in making me afraid. As ever, I am amazed at my father's foresight." Her gaze was uncomfortably direct, and he had to force himself to meet it, keeping silent. "What I have to say to you is simple," she told him. "Leave the Order, serve my father at court and in war. In time you will become a sword of the realm, and we may fulfill the plan he laid for us." He searched her face for some sign of mockery or deceit, but found only serious intent. "You wish us to marry, Highness?" "I wish to honor my father." "Your father believes his plan for me dead. Leaving the Order would be of no value to him now. If I followed your command, I would be acting against his wishes." "I will speak to him. He listens to my counsel in most things. He will hear the wisdom of my course." He saw it then, the faint glimmer in her eyes. The wrongness deepened as he realized he had seen it before, in Sister Henna's eyes when she tried to kill him. There wasn't malice, exactly, more calculation mixed with desire. But where Sister Henna had desired his death, the princess wanted more, and he doubted it was the delightful prospect of being his wife. "You honor me greatly, Highness," he said, his tone as formal as he could make it. "But I'm sure you will understand that I have given my life in service to the faith. I am a brother of the Sixth Order, and this meeting is unseemly. I would be very grateful if you would permit me to withdraw." She looked down, a small, wry smile on her lips. "Of course, brother. Please forgive my discourtesy in delaying you." He bowed and turned to leave, reaching the door before she stopped him. "I have much to do, Valin." Her tone was devoid of humor or affectation, entirely serious and sincere. Her true voice, he thought. He paused at the door and didn't turn, waiting. "What I have to do would have been easier with you at my side, but I will do it nevertheless, and I will tolerate no obstacle. Believe me when I say I should hate us to be enemies." He glanced back at her. "Thank you for showing me your garden, Highness." She inclined her head and turned her gaze back to the sky. He was dismissed. The most beautiful woman he had ever seen, bathed in moonlight. It was a truly captivating sight, one he found himself fervently wishing he never saw again. Part 3. "It pleases me to report the excellent progress made by Lord Alhestian's command in recent months. Many deniers have paid the appropriate price for their heresy, or fled the forest in fear of their lives. The spirits of the men are high. Rarely have I encountered soldiers so enthused by their cause. Brother Yalin Heltis, Fourth Order, letter to Aspect Tendris Alphorn, during the Martish Forest Campaign, Fourth Order Archives." Vernier's account. He had fallen silent as my quill continued its fevered track across the parchment. About me lay the 10 scrolls I had filled with his story. Outside, night had descended, and our only illumination came from a single lantern, swaying from a deck beam above our heads. My wrist ached from hours of writing, and my back was strained with hunching over the barrel, on which I had chosen to rest my papers. I scarcely noticed.
Well? I prompted.
His face was somber. In the dim glow of the lantern, his expression distant. I had to speak again before he roused himself.
"I'm thirsty," he said, reaching for the flask the captain had allowed him to fill from the water barrel. "Haven't said more than a few words a day for 5 years. My throat hurts."
I put my quill down and rested my aching spine on the hull.
"Did you see her again?" I asked.
"The princess?"
"No. I expect she had no use for me since I refused her plan."
He lifted the flask to his mouth, drinking deep. "But her fame grew over the years. The legend of her beauty and her kindness spread far and wide. Often she was seen in the poorer quarters of the city and the wider realm, giving alms to the needy, providing funds for new schools and fifth-order sick houses. Many nobles courted her, but she refused them all. There was talk that the king was angry with her for failing to wed a conveniently powerful husband. But she defied his will, though it pained her greatly.
You think she still waits for you?
The tragedy of it stirred my righteous soul. That she mends her broken heart with good deeds, knowing that only this will win your approval. Although, for all she knows, you have been dead these past 5 years. The look he gave me was one of amused incredulity. After a moment he began to laugh. He had a deep, rich laugh. A laugh that was both loud and, on this occasion, very lengthy. "One day, my lord," he said when his mirth had subsided, "if your gods curse you, you may get to meet Princess Lerna. If you do, take my advice and run very fast in the opposite direction. Your heart, I think, she would find far too easy to crush." He tossed the water flask to me. I drank quickly, hoping it disguised my anger. Everything he had told me about the princess bespoke a woman of intelligence and duty, a woman who wished to honor her father and serve her people. I suspected I could find much to discuss with such a woman. "She hasn't wed because her husband would be a shackle for her," Vaelin Alsauna told me. "She does good deeds to curry favor with the common folk, win their hearts, and she wins power. If she has a heart, then it's power that stirs it, not passion." Silently I resolved to make my own researches into the life of Princess Lerna. The more this Northman told me, the greater my compulsion to travel to his homeland. Although I suspected he had little appreciation for the artistry and learning evident in the culture he described, I lusted for it. I wanted to read the books in the great library, and view Master Benrel Leniel's frescoes of the Red Hand. I wanted to see the ancient stones of the Circle, where he had spilled the blood of 3 men. We had thought the people of the Unified Realm little more than illiterate savages, and in truth, many of their warriors had been just that. But now I could see there was more to their story than simple barbarism and warlust. In a few short hours, I had learned more of his realm than in all the years of study for my history of the war. He had kindled something in me, the desire to write another history, greater and richer than all my previous work, a history of his realm. "Did the king keep his promise?" I asked. "Did he impose his justice and save the woman in the black hold?" "The men I named were executed the next day. The woman and her son were packed off to the northern reaches within the week." He paused, his face heavy with sorrow. "I went to see her before she left. Erlin arranged the meeting. I begged her for forgiveness. She spat at me and called me a murderer. I took up my quill and wrote down his words, taking the liberty of exchanging 'spat at me' with 'cursed me with all the power of her denier gods.' I like to add a little color where I can."
"And you're part of the bargain?" I continued.
"Did you do what the king had commanded? Did you kill Lindon Alhestian?" He looked down at his hands, resting on his knees, flexing the fingers, the veins and sinews standing out clearly amidst the scars. Killer's hands, I thought, knowing they could choke the life from me in a few seconds.
"Yes," he said. "I killed him."
Chapter 1. A Cumberland longbow was over 5 feet long when unstrung, and fashioned from the heartwood of a yew tree. It could propel an arrow over 200 paces, almost 300 in skilled hands, and was quite capable of piercing plate armour at close range. The one Valin held was slightly thicker than most, the smoothness of the stave evidence of the extensive use it had seen. Its owner had a keen eye, sending his steel-tipped arrow clean through the armoured chest of one Martil el Jelnek, an affable young noble with a fondness for poetry and a somewhat tiresome inclination to talk constantly about his betrothed, who he claimed to be the fairest and kindest maid in all of Azrael, if not the world. Sadly, he would never see her again. His eyes were open, but he had lost all vestige of life. His mouth was stained with blood and vomit, the signs of a painful death. Cumberland archers tended to coat their arrowheads in a mixture of joffrel root and adder venom. The bow's owner lay a few yards away, with Valin's shaft in his arm, his neck broken by the fall from the birch in which he had hidden. "Nothing," Barker said, trudging through the snow, flanked by Canis and Dentos. "Looks like he was the only one." He kicked the dead archer's head, making it swivel on a twisted spine, before needing to divest the corpse of any valuables. "Where'd all the soldiers go?" Dentos asked. "Scattered," Valin said. "Probably find most of them in the camp when we get back." "Bloody cowards." Dentos peered down at Martil el Jelnek. "Didn't they like him? Thought he was a nice enough fellow myself, for a highborn." "These supposed soldiers are the sweepings of the Varenshold dungeons, brother," Canis told him. "They have no loyalty to any man save themselves." "Did you find his horse?" Valin asked. He didn't relish the prospect of carrying the dead noble back to the camp. "Norto's bringing it," Barker said, straightening from the archer, jingling a few coppers he had found. He tossed the Cumbrelian's quiver to Valin. The arrows it held were stained ash black, and fletched with raven's feathers. Their enemies like to sign their work. "You keeping that?" He nodded at the bow. "I could get 10 silvers for it when we get back to the city." Valin kept hold of the weapon. "Thought I'd see if I could master it. Good luck. These buggers train for a lifetime from what I hear. Their fief lord makes them practice every day." He looked down at the meagre collection of coppers in his hand. "Doesn't seem keen on paying it much, though." "This lot fight for their god, not their lord," Canis said. "Money holds little interest for them." They stripped the armor from el Jelnek and heaved him onto the back of his horse, Norta slapping Barkus's hand away when it strayed to the dead man's purse. "He won't need it, will he?" "We left the house 7 months ago for faith's sake," Norta snapped. "You don't need to steal any more." Barkus shrugged. "It's a habit." 7 months, Valin thought as they made their way back to camp. 7 months of hunting Cumbrelian deniers in the Martish forest, aided in the loosest sense by Lyndon Alhestian and his newly raised regiment of infantry. Lyndon Alhestian, who was conspicuously alive a full month longer than the king had ordained. With every passing day, Valin felt the burden of his bargain weigh a little more heavily. His mood was not lightened by his surroundings. The Martish was not the Earlish, being both darker and denser. The trees so close to each other in some places that it was practically impassable. Added to this was the broken nature of the ground, dotted with hollows and gullies that made perfect ambush sites and forced them to abandon their horses. They walked everywhere, with bows ready and arrows notched. Only the nobles amongst their contingent continued to ride, making themselves easy targets for the Cumbrelian archers, who haunted the trees. Of the 15 young nobles who had accompanied Lyndon Alhestian to the Martish, 4 were dead, and another 3 wounded so badly they had had to be carried out. Their men had suffered worse. 600 had been enlisted or pressed into the regiment, but over 1/3 were gone, killed or lost amidst the trees, some undoubtedly deserting when the chance arose. Often they would find men who had been missing for weeks, frozen in the snow or tied to a tree, and tormented to death. Their enemies had no use for captives. Despite the losses, their small order contingent had won a few victories. A month ago, Canis led them in tracking a group of over 20 Cumbrelians as they moved along a creek. A clever move, but of little value if Canis was on their trail. They followed for hours, until their enemies paused to rest. Hard-faced men in buckskin and sable pelts, their longbows on their backs, not expecting trouble. The first volley cut down half, the rest turning and fleeing back along the creek bed. The brothers drew their swords and hunted them down. None had escaped, and none had asked for quarter. Canis was right. Their enemies fought for their god, and displayed little reluctance in dying for him. The camp came into view a few miles later. In truth, it was a stockade rather than an encampment. When they first arrived, they had tried mounting a sentry picket, which had simply provided their enemies with an opportunity for some nighttime archery practice. Lyndon Alhestian had been forced to order trees felled to provide timber for a stockade, a grim circle of spiked trunks sitting in one of the few clearings to be found in the Martish. Phelan and most of the order contingent hated the damp oppression of the place, and spent most of their time in the forest, patrolling in small groups, making their own camps, which they moved every day, playing their deadly game of chase with the Cumbrailans, whilst Alhestian soldiers sheltered in their stockade. The sortie by the unfortunate Martil Aljelnik had been the first for weeks. Even then, the men he led had to be threatened with a flogging before they would march. In the event, it had taken a single arrow to set them to flight. A stocky brother with bushy, frost-adorned eyebrows and a fierce glower was waiting at the gate to the stockade. At his side was a very large mongrel, with a grey-flecked coat and a gaze that could match its master's for fierceness. "Brother Mackerel!" Velen greeted him with a short bow. Mackerel wasn't much for formalities, but as commander of their contingent, he deserved a show of respect. Especially in front of Alhestian soldiery, some of whom were loitering near the gate, fearful eyes tracking from Aljelnik's corpse to the dark wall of the forest, as if a Cumbrailan arrow might come hissing at them from the shadows at any moment. Velen had managed to hide his surprise when the aspect had called him to his room, and he found Mackerel waiting, staring at the red, diamond-shaped cloth in his hand, a bemused expression on his blunt features. "You two are acquainted, I believe," the aspect said. "We met during my test of the wild aspect. Brother Mackerel has been appointed commander of our expedition to the Martish Forest," the aspect told him. "You will follow his orders without question." Apparently few men knew the Martish as well as Mackerel, save for Master Huttrill, who couldn't be spared from his duties at the order house. Their contingent numbered only 30 brothers, mostly experienced men from the northern border, who seemed to share Velen's wariness of Mackerel. But he quickly proved himself an adept tactician, albeit with a somewhat abrupt style of leadership. "One fucking hour," he growled. "You were supposed to sweep the south for 2 days." "Lord Aljelnik's men ran away," Norta said. "Didn't see much point staying out there." "Was I asking you, snot boy?" Mackerel demanded. He had taken an instant dislike to all of them, but reserved most of his bile for Norta. Beside him, his mongrel snout gave a growl of agreement. Where he found the animal, Velen had no idea. Apparently Mackerel had given up on slave hounds after his experience with Scratch, and opted for the largest and most ill-tempered hunting dog he could find, regardless of breeding. Several soldiers bore scars as evidence of Snout's dislike of petting or eye contact. Norta stared back at Mackerel with fully reciprocated dislike. Velen worried continually what would happen if the two were left alone together. "We thought it best to return with the body, brother," Velen said. "We will patrol ourselves this evening." Mackerel turned his glower on Velen. "Some of the men made it back. Said there had been at least 50 scum out there." Mackerel always referred to the Cumbrailans as scum. "How many did you get?" Velen hefted the longbow in his hand. "One." Mackerel's bushy eyebrows knitted together. "One out of 50? "One out of one, brother." Mackerel sighed heavily. "We'd better report to his lordship. He's got another letter to write." Lord Lyndon Alhestian was tall and handsome, with an easy smile and a lively sense of humour. He was courageous in battle and skilled with sword and lance. Contrary to the king's description, he also turned out to possess a quick mind, and his apparent arrogance was merely the swagger of a young man who had achieved much in his short life and saw little reason to hide his self-satisfaction. Velen, much to his regret, found himself liking the young noble, although he had to admit the man made a terrible leader. His nature simply lacked the necessary ruthlessness. He had threatened the men with flogging many times, but had yet to inflict any punishment at all, despite obvious cowardice, drunkenness, and a camp that was a disgrace to soldierly conduct.
"Brothers!"
he greeted them with a broad smile as they approached his tent, the smile fading as he saw the body slung over the horse. Clearly none of the fleeing men had bothered to tell him the news.
"My condolences, my lord," Valen said.
He knew the two men had been friends since childhood. Lyndon Alhestian moved to the corpse, his face stricken with grief, and gently touched his dead friend's hair.
"Did he go down fighting?"
he asked after a moment, voice thick with emotion. Valen saw Norta open his mouth to reply, and cut in quickly. Norta had a tendency to indulge his cruel streak where Lord Alhestian was concerned, voicing barely concealed insults and criticism without hesitation.
"He was very brave, my lord."
Martil Al-Jelnik had wept like a child with the arrow buried in his gut. His hands clutched at Valen in brief, desperate spasms as the light of life faded from his eyes and effluence spouted from his mouth. He had tried to say something at the end. Valen was sure of it, his mouth stumbling over a torrent of bile, choked gibberish. Perhaps some message for his beloved. They would never know.
"Brave,"
Alhestian repeated with a faint smile. "Yes, he was always that."
"His men ran," Norta said. "One arrow and they ran. This regiment of yours is no more than a rabble of criminal scum."
"Enough," Brother Mackerel barked.
Sergeant Krelnik approached, snapping a smart salute at Alhestian. He was a stocky man nearing his 50th year, with a heavily scarred face and a fearsome disposition towards the men. As he was one of the few experienced soldiers to enlist in the regiment, having served in the Realm Guard since the age of 16, Alhestian had wisely made him Master Sergeant, responsible for discipline. But despite his best efforts, Norta's description was accurate. The regiment remained a rabble.
"I'll order the pyre built, my lord," Sergeant Krelnik said. "We should give him to the flames tonight."
Alhestian nodded, stepping back from the corpse.
"Yes, thank you, Sergeant. And you, brothers, for bringing him back."
He returned to his tent. "Brother Mackerel, Brother Valen, may I have a moment?" Alhestian's tent was free of the luxuries found in the quarters of the other nobles, the available space taken up with his weapons and armor, which he cleaned and maintained himself. Most of the other nobles had brought along a servant or two, but apparently Lord Alhestian was capable of seeing to his own needs. "Please, brothers." He gestured for them to take a seat and moved to the small portable desk where he dealt with the numerous administrative tasks that beset regimental commanders. "A royal missive," he said, lifting an opened envelope from the desk. Velen's heart began to beat a little faster at the sight of the king's seal. "To Lord Lyndon Alhestian, Commander of the 35th Regiment of Foot, from His Highness Janus Alnirin." Alhestian read, "My lord, please accept my congratulations for keeping a regiment in the field for such a protracted period. Lesser commanders would no doubt have opted for the more obvious course of concluding the realm's business in the Martish Forest with the utmost dispatch. You, however, clearly have a more subtle stratagem in mind, so subtle, in fact, that I am unable to discern its substance from this distance. You will recall Aspect Arlin's gracious provision of a contingent from the Sixth Order, brothers for whom the Aspect is keen to find other employment. I hear my former battle lord's son is among them, and I feel sure he has inherited his father's appreciation for urgency in carrying out his king's commands. Perhaps you should discuss your plans with these brothers, who may be of sufficiently generous disposition to offer some advice." Valen was appalled to find his hands trembling, and hid them in his cloak, hoping the others assumed he was feeling the chill.
"So, brothers," Alhestian said, regarding them with an expression of honest despair, "I must seek your counsel, it seems."
"I've given you my counsel several times, my lord," Mackerel said. "Flog some men, force the laziest and most cowardly through the gates without weapons, and allow Sergeant Krelnik a free hand in discipline."
Alhestian massaged his temples, fatigue evident in his brows.
"Such measures would hardly win the men's hearts, brother."
"Bugger their hearts! It's a rare commander that can win the love of his men. Most rule by fear.
Make them fear you, and they'll respect you. Then perhaps they'll start killing some Cumberlands. I suspect from the tone of His Highness's letter, we may have little more than a few weeks to conclude matters here. And despite the King's assumption, I confess I have no stratagem for bringing down Black Arrow and his cohorts. Even if I adopt the measures you recommend, it will take more time than we have to win victory in this blighted forest. Black Arrow. They got the name from the only prisoner they had taken in 7 months, an archer brought down by Norta. He lived long enough to spit hate and defiance at them, calling on his god to accept his soul and begging forgiveness for his failure. He laughed at their questions. There were few threats that could be made to a dying man. In the end, Valin had sent the others away, sitting down to offer the man his water bottle. Drink? The man's eyes were bright with defiance, but the maddening thirst as his lifeblood seeped away made him bite back a refusal.
I'll tell you nothing.
I know. Valin held the bottle to the man's lips as he drank. Do you think he will forgive you? Your god?
The World Father is great in his compassion. The dying man spoke fiercely, spitting the words. He will know my weaknesses, and my strengths, and love me for both.
Valin watched the man clutch at the arrow in his side, a small whimper escaping his lips. Why do you hate us? Valin asked. Why do you kill us? The man's whimper of pain turned into a rasping laugh of bitterness.
Why do you kill us, brother?
You came here in defiance of treaty. Your lord agreed you would not bring word of your god to the other fiefs.
His words cannot be bound by borders, nor by the servants of a false faith. Black Arrow brought us here to defend those you would slaughter in service to your heresy. He knew that peace between us was a betrayal, a vile blasphemy.
He choked off, coughing uncontrollably. Valin had tried to coax more information from him, but the man would only ramble on about his god, his words becoming less coherent as his life ebbed away. He soon slipped into unconsciousness, his breathing faltering to stillness within a few minutes. For some reason, Valin found himself wishing he had asked his name. And you, Brother Valin? Alhestian's question brought him back to the present with a start. Our king seems to have faith in your judgment. Can you advise a method for bringing this campaign to a close? Call an end to the whole bloody farce and go home. He left the thought unsaid. Alhestian couldn't leave the forest without victory, or at least a claim to victory. And the king does not wish him to leave the forest at all, he reminded himself. You have a bargain to keep. Who's to say His Highness cannot undo what he has done? Your men are hunted by Black Arrow's archers whenever they leave the camp, he said. But my brothers and I are not. We are the hunters in this forest, and the Cumberlands fear us. Your men must become hunters also, at least those who can be taught. Mackerel snorted.
This lot couldn't be taught to piss straight, never mind hunt.
There must be some men here who can be trained. The faith teaches us there is worth even in the most wretched. I suggest we select a few, 30 or so. We will train them, they will answer to us. We will organize a raid, find one of Black Arrow's encampments, and destroy it. When they have their first success against the Cumberlands, the rest of the men will be inspired. He paused, gathering the will for what he had to do. It would further inspire the men if you were to lead the raid personally, my lord. Soldiers will respect a leader who shares their dangers. And much can happen in the confusion of a raid. An arrow can easily go astray. Alhestian stroked the sparse stubble on his chin. Brother Mackerel, you agree with this course of action? Mackerel gave Valin a sidelong glance, his heavy brows creased with suspicion. He knows something isn't right, Valin realized. He can smell it, like a hound catching an unfamiliar scent. It's worth a try, Mackerel said after a moment. Finding their encampment, though.